The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we are on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. Today we explore the large price increase this season, check out some priorities for pending reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and explore the controversy surrounding Walmart's decision to only stock salmon carrying the MSC sustainability label. All of that and more is coming up on today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. This season, commercial fishermen in Bristol Bay saw a significant increase in the price paid for sockeye. For the past couple of years, the base price was $1 a pound, but this year the base price jumped up to $1.50 a pound. One of the keenest observers of the salmon markets is fisheries economist Gunnar Knapp with the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research.
This price increase is great news for Bristol Bay fishermen. It's hugely significant. It's a 50% jump over last year, even more amazing, I think, is that this reported price is more than three times as high as the price was 12 years ago. So if you think what an incredible turnaround that is for the Bristol Bay sockeye fishery in that time, it's really great news, especially given that the catch was disappointing and lower than last year.
This year's sockeye run to Bristol Bay will likely end up at just over 23 million fish, which is about 3 million short of the preseason forecast. Total harvest this year in the Bay is about 15.5 million sockeye, which is over a million fish short of the anticipated harvest included as part of the preseason forecast. Some observers believe the price increase is due to a short supply of sockeye salmon products and the overall strength in the world salmon markets. However, another factor that could be at play specifically in regards to Bristol Bay is the higher quality of the overall salmon pack. Bristol Bay driftnet fisherman Buck Gibbons has long been a proponent of making quality improvements in Bristol Bay, and he acknowledges that a significant milestone was achieved last year when 50% of the sockeye harvested in Bristol Bay was chilled at the point of harvest.
We're halfway home, and I suppose we could brag that half of the fish is chilled, but in this next breath you have to talk about the other half that's not. And so I think there's still room to grow, and there's still room to improve, if for nothing else incrementally. But I see that the market for refrigerated fish is starting to go up again, and a fisherman is contemplating installing RSW in his boat can do the math and see where it fits in for him. It's been a hell of a deal for me. I couldn't imagine fishing without RSW now, and the benefits that it's brought to me, personally, you know, just in terms of how I feel about the product that I deliver, but value that we're building into Bristol Bay.
For generations, Bristol Bay suffered with a poor quality reputation because of the way the fish were caught and handled. That reputation has been significantly changed in recent years, as many fishermen, processors, and customers have essentially been demanding quality improvements, including chilling more fish at the point of harvest and stopping bad handling practices by both fishermen and the processing sector. UAA's Gunnar Knapp says Bristol Bay's new reputation for producing high-quality fish has allowed for market expansion.
The improved quality is critical to being able to produce new kinds of products for new markets where that quality is essential. And those new markets in particular for frozen fillets, are another critical reason, contributing reason to why you're seeing such strong such strong demand and prices.
While the quality issue might be a significant factor, Knapp says it's not the only factor at play in setting a base price for Bristol Bay sockeye. He says the larger salmon markets are strong, and that's putting upward pressure on sockeye prices.
When you look at prices this year, you have to start with the fact that all global salmon markets are much stronger this year than they were last year. It's driven by very strong salmon demand worldwide, and in particular, strong demand for farmed Atlantic salmon, which is leading to very high farmed Atlantic salmon prices at the moment. Well, what does that have to do with Bristol Bay? What it has to do with Bristol Bay is that sockeye does compete in certain markets with this farmed Atlantic salmon, and when your competitor's price gets higher, then you can charge a higher price, and so that is a major helpful factor.
So far, the known equation to come up with a base sockeye price in Bristol Bay includes the higher quality of the fish being caught and processed and the strong markets for salmon, but that's apparently not the only factor in play. KDLG News has been hearing speculation that some of the 50-cent increase in the base price is due to the decision by Silver Bay Seafoods to enter the Bristol Bay market in a big way next year. Knapp says that might indeed be something the existing processors considered.
Clearly, the main thing driving the Bristol Bay prices we've seen this year and the strong base price is, in fact, the strong sockeye market conditions. But I think that it's a clear possibility that that another factor in the way things are playing out this year is that there's a major new processor that's going to be entering the Bristol Bay processing next year, and that major new processor is going to be looking for a lot of fishermen to fish for them. And so I'm guessing that part of what we're seeing with this high base price is the processors that are currently in the bay are trying to send a message to their fishermen that they're good partners, that they should stick with them. And I'm guessing that the existing processors are hoping that fishermen are going to think twice about leaving a processor who's just paid them a really good price.
All season long, there was speculation that we would see a large increase in the base price in Bristol Bay, but the first rumblings that it actually happened was last weekend when one by one the processors started posting prices and passing the word along to their fishermen. By the end of the weekend, all of the major processors had apparently posted $1.50 a pound. Considering that the processors all have different costs, different marketing plans, and different priorities, it could seem strange that they all came up with the same base price in just a matter of days. Some fishermen continue to believe that the processors collectively come together to set a base price. However, Gunnar Knapp says what's really at play is true competition.
When processors post a price, they're not just buying, this year's fish. They are buying, they're hoping to buy the loyalty of fishermen going into the current season. So let's say I'm sure that, I've talked with many processors about sort of how do they make decisions, and they agonize over, what their costs are and what they, as of this point in the year, they don't really know what they're selling prices are going to be, what prices they're really going to be able to afford. But if somebody else comes out and posts a price of $1.50, you don't have a lot of choice. If you say, holy cow, our cost structure doesn't support that, our markets, say hypothetically, we'd have felt a lot better with a price of $1.40. Your fleet manager is going to come in and say, if the other guy posted $1.50 and you only post $1.40, we're not going to have any fleet next year. That's why most kinds of products, if you drive around town in Anchorage and you look at the gas stations, I'm sure they all have somewhat different cost structures also, but they always end up posting, similar prices, because if a guy down the street is selling gas for, 10 cents lower, you're not going to, you're not going to get any customers if you say, well, I need this price. So in general, when you have competition in a market, and there's a lot of competition for fishermen in Bristol Bay, you don't have a choice. Once the people that you perceive as your competition or that you might lose fishermen to have posted a price, you're going to have to you're going to have to match that, and fishermen expect it.
The recently announced base price of $1.50 a pound for Bristol Bay sockeye does not include bonuses for things like chilling, bleeding, or using tools like the salmon slide. It also does not include the commonly used production bonuses paid by some processors to reward their high-producing fishermen. If you would like to share information about bonuses or any subsequent postseason adjustments to the price, you can send an email to mike@kdlg.org, or you can call KDLG News at 842-5281. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, 1-800-816-3741.
You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. Earlier this summer, Walmart announced that it would only be selling frozen salmon products that carry the Marine Stewardship Council's label of sustainability. Alaska's commercial salmon catch used to carry the MSC label, but most of the large processors in the state of Alaska decided to withdraw from the program, resulting in this year's salmon pack not being eligible to carry the MSC label. The result of that move could mean that frozen salmon products from Alaska won't be available at Walmart stores. That could be significant because Walmart is the largest retailer on earth and the largest supplier of groceries in the United States. Alaska Governor Sean Parnell is asking Walmart to reconsider its decision to only stock MSC-labeled salmon products. The governor sent a letter to the president and CEO of Walmart on July the 16th. In that letter, the governor stressed that despite not carrying the MSC label, Alaska's salmon are sustainably managed.
The MSC certification today is not as meaningful as it once was because it's become much more political. They have ever-changing definitions of sustainability. They've got increased fees for the MSC certification. Bottom line, we have an alternative certification process that other companies and other countries are participating in. We think Walmart ought to reconsider because our fisheries are managed better than a number of MSC certified fisheries for sustainability.
Instead of supporting a recertification effort for Alaska's commercially caught salmon to carry the MSC label, the governor and many of the large processors in Alaska got behind the successful effort by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute to create a new sustainability label based on the standards of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. Governor Parnell says his goal is not to broker a deal to get Alaska's catch covered by the MSC label. Rather, he wants to garner increased support for alternate labels.
How do we get other countries and companies to join us in alternative certification for sustainability, one that is more based in science, one that is indexed to the standards of the Food and Agriculture Association of the UN that provides a meaningful guarantee of responsible, sustainable management. So I haven't focused on what the absolute impact of Walmart is. I just know that Walmart needs to reconsider its decision, bring its analysis of sustainability up to date with the current state of play, not something based in 2006 kind of thinking.
In his letter to Walmart CEO Michael Duke, Governor Parnell outlined the long history of sustainable management of the salmon fisheries in Alaska, and he stressed that the state has banned fish farming in an effort to protect the wild salmon stocks. Governor Parnell confirmed that his office heard back from Walmart on Thursday.
And we are working to get them a meeting with our appropriate people, like our Commissioner of Commerce, Susan Bell, for example, and others who have worked the MSC issue with the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute.
Alaska is one of the great seafood-producing regions on Earth, and seafood from Alaskan waters accounts for over half of all the seafood produced in the United States. Alaska produces over 95% of the wild salmon caught in U.S. waters. A leading fisheries economist believes a solution to Walmart not carrying frozen salmon products from Alaska will be worked out. Gunnar Knapp works for the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research, and he believes the Walmart controversy will blow over.
Walmart will realize that it doesn't actually have any choice. If it wants to have one of the best fish products in the world in its store, namely wild Alaska, wild salmon, it's going to have to buy Alaska salmon, and there isn't enough. There's nowhere near enough MSC salmon. If Alaska isn't MSC salmon, then there's not going to be anywhere near enough MSC salmon coming from other places in the world to find some alternative source, especially if you want, say, high-quality sockeye salmon fillets, such as are available in Walmart's competitors.
One of the ways the MSC issue could potentially blow over is for Alaska's commercially caught salmon to carry both the MSC label and the sustainability label supported by ASME and many of the large processors. An effort is underway by the Purse Seine Vessel Owners Association to get much of the salmon caught commercially in Alaska covered by the MSC label. Kerry Coughlin is the MSC America's Regional Director, and she says if all goes as planned, the recertification effort could be completed by this fall.
We have a long-standing relationship with the Alaska fishing industry. In that sense, it's very important to us. We've thought of it as a good partnership, and we've brought benefit to that fishery. And having that fishery in the program has brought benefit, of course, to the MSC program as well. But we really look at this as the markets that are requiring, and this isn't something that MSC has just generated, although we've certainly serviced this, but there are markets around the world that want to see an independent third-party certification. They've chosen MSC as that platform, and so they want to continue to source MSC-certified Alaska salmon and have it be part of that program to tell the world about Alaska's sustainable fishery management. So in that sense, we think it brings great benefit to the fishermen and the companies in Alaska, and we hope to be able to continue to do that.
If the new MSC certificate is issued, only Alaska salmon that is sold from fishermen to designated companies in the Purse Seine Vessel Owners Association client group will be permitted to carry the MSC Eco label. That client group includes Copper River Seafoods, 10th and M Seafoods, Ecuc Fisheries, and Silver Bay Seafoods. Ecuc Fisheries is based in Bristol Bay, and Copper River Seafoods is a partner in Togiak Seafoods. That means that if the salmon fisheries in Alaska are recertified under MSC, at least some of the sockeye from Bristol Bay could carry the MSC label. However, Norm Van Vactor says the amount of Bristol Bay salmon allowed to carry the MSC label could be much larger in coming years. Van Vactor is the CEO of the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation.
Silver Bay Seafoods, who's going to be the new processor, in the Bay in 2014, they're one of the major supporters of maintaining the MSC standard. So I think you could add Silver Bay to the list of companies that would continue and be able to supply Bristol Bay sockeye as MSC certified.
Another new development is that the effort to get Alaska's commercially caught salmon recertified under the MSC standards will not include salmon caught in Prince William Sound. That's because of concerns that the sustainability of the salmon fisheries in the Sound are being jeopardized by interactions between hatchery-raised salmon and the wild stocks. Alaska Governor Sean Parnell claims that Alaska's salmon fisheries are the most sustainably managed fisheries on Earth, and he says the decision by Walmart to not carry frozen salmon products made with Alaska's non-MSC certified salmon sends the wrong message.
There is no scientific reason to do that, and we want to make sure they have good information for their decision. Alaska's salmon is managed sustainably, always has been since statehood, always will be, and that's just who we are as Alaskans, and that's important to our fisheries, it's important to our communities, it's important to our people.
The Marine Stewardship Council was created in 1997, and since that time, the Council's sustainability label has become the leading eco-label on Earth, and it's required to sell seafood into many markets, especially some of the markets in Europe. In May of last year, many of the large seafood processors that account for about 80% of the salmon processed in Alaska made the decision to withdraw their support from the MSC label. Those processors include AGS, Icicle, Ocean Beauty, and Trident Seafoods. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG Public Radio. Congress has begun working on reauthorizing the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is the long-standing legislation that basically governs the nation's federal fisheries. The process is expected to be lengthy and comprehensive due to the sheer number of issues that fall under the jurisdiction of the act. Many fishery stakeholders are weighing in on how the act should be updated, including one of the world's renowned fisheries experts. Ray Hilborn is a professor in the School of Aquatic and Fishery Sciences at the University of Washington. Hilborn recently authored an editorial in which he stressed the importance of addressing food, jobs, and revenue in the reauthorization process. Hilborn often spends part of his summers in Bristol Bay tracking and studying the Bristol Bay sockeye run, and KDLG News caught up with him at the university's field camp in Alignagek.
The Magnuson-Stevens Act is really built around the idea of trying to first, you know, do maximum sustained yield, maximum benefits to the nation. There was a wide perception, and it was largely true in the, say, the, by the 1990s, that overfishing was a major threat to the sustainability of U.S. fisheries. Not so much in Alaska, in fact, not very much in Alaska, but particularly in the East Coast and some on the West Coast. And it sort of snowballed. And there were all these papers in scientific journals that got covered in the New York Times and the Washington Post about, you know, all fish will be gone by 2048. And the net result is we've become totally obsessed with overfishing as the biggest threat to fisheries contributing to the American economy.
Great strides have been made in recent years to eliminate overfishing, but in his editorial, Hilborn writes that while we have reduced overfishing, one consequence has been far more underutilized fish stocks, and we seem to have lost sight of the actual goals of employment, food supply, and revenue.
In the U.S., we lose a couple percent of the potential yield due to overfishing, but we lose, depending on how you calculate it, anywhere from 30 to 50% of the potential catch of American fisheries by being so cautious. And yet, at the, there was a conference in D.C. called Managing Our Nation's Fisheries back in, I guess it was early May, might have been late April, where a number of NGOs were arguing we need to be more cautious. We're, you know, that we're still, you know, we're threatening the birds and mammals of the ocean by overfishing fisheries. And I just don't think, and I know because I've talked to congressional staff, that they have no idea how cautious the American system is. That NOAA only reports, when it reports on the status of American fisheries, it says, this is how many fisheries are overfished. There is no report on how much we're losing by being so cautious in order to try to have nothing overfished. And you know, I'm not making a statement what we should do. I'm saying, but if our objective is maximum sustained yield, overfishing is not the problem in the United States. It is under exploiting a whole bunch of fish stocks.
Back in the year 2000, about 38% of U.S. fish stocks were considered overfished, but last year that declined down to 19%. In his editorial, Hilborn put forward an estimate that as of 2005, the U.S. was losing about 9% of the potential U.S. yield from fisheries due to overfishing, but the lost yield due to underfishing was about 30%. Hilborn wrapped up his editorial by urging NOAA to calculate lost food production, lost jobs, and lost revenue, and to report that information to Congress. He then called on Congress to explicitly state the objectives of the U.S. fisheries management in terms of food, jobs, revenue, economic profit, and maintaining high abundance of fish in the oceans as an end in itself. Among the organizations supporting minimal changes to the Magnuson-Stevens Act is the Pacific Seafood Processors Association, which is a trade organization made up of some of the big processors that operate in Alaska, including AGS, North Pacific, Peter Pan, Unicy, Westward, and Trident Seafoods. Glenn Reed is the organization's president. Reed has been closely following the reauthorization efforts in Washington, and he believes it will be a couple of years until a final bill is approved.
I'd look to 15 or maybe after to get a reauthorized bill. And like I say, we think the Magnuson Act as is working very well. It's a national law. So when you change it, you have to be very mindful of how it might affect someone who's operating in a different mode. So it's working for us. And I think our record in fisheries management and the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council that manages those federal fisheries bears that out.
Alaska has long been held up as a model for how to manage fisheries, and Vince O'Shea says that model has positively served the state and federal fisheries in the North Pacific. O'Shea recently attended a major conference focused on the effort to rewrite the Magnuson-Stevens Act. He's a vice president with the Pacific Seafood Processors Association.
Things that the Alaskans have done for a long time, which is precautionary management, focus on sustainability, science-based decisions, and frankly, a commitment to the future and to the long haul. Those concepts, I think Alaskans are very fortunate. Those are the foundational principles of how the federal fisheries as well as the state fisheries are managed in our state. Believe it or not, those concepts are not accepted universally throughout the rest of the country. And what I was pleased that the Alaska system is producing great results, and I think it would be a shame to have tinkering done that would backslide. There was one, Clemtillion was there, as a matter of fact, and says, this didn't come easy. We put people out of business. We had to make hard sacrifices going from territorial times into statehood to return our salmon stocks to their abundance. And I think Alaska is very fortunate that people that went before us made those sacrifices so we have the benefits that we do now. So that was one of my takeaways from that. And that's in the Magnuson Act. And he said, if you had followed the Magnuson Act back in 1976, maybe you wouldn't have had as many problems as you have right now.
The Magnuson-Stevens Act was first implemented in 1976 and was last updated in 2006. That update is scheduled to sunset on the 30th of September. So far, the House Natural Resources Committee has held several oversight hearings on the reauthorization effort, and the Senate Committee on Oceans, Atmosphere, Fisheries, and the Coast Guard has also begun working on the reauthorization. That committee is chaired by U.S. Senator Mark Begich from Alaska, who recently held a listening session on the MSA reauthorization effort in Fairbanks. This fall, Begich is planning to hold oversight hearings in other areas of the country, including in New England and the Gulf of Mexico. That concludes this edition of KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The report can be heard during June and July each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 4 p.m. You can listen to the report online through our website at kdlg.org. And if you have something to add, a correction, or background information to pass along, you can send an email to mike@kdlg.org, or you can call 842-5281. Until next time, please be safe, watch the weather, and stay tuned to Bristol Bay's public radio station, KDLG.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA. We are on board with you.